Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I am Brian DeNovellis, and as we approach Thanksgiving and Feast Week tournaments, we've already seen some impressive individual performances from the likes of Monmouth's Abdi Bashir, who set a Monmouth record with 10 three-pointers against Rutgers. And of course, Rutgers' Dylan Harper, who matched the great Hall of Famer Phil Sellers by beginning his Rutgers career with three straight 20-point performances as a freshman. We've also seen some highs. We've seen some lows. Hello, Wagner. And some sparkling debuts, much anticipated debuts in particular, by Rutgers ace Bailey. And we've also witnessed some surprises. Manhattan knocking off Fordham. And then Fairleigh Dickinson topping Manhattan just 2 days later. But the biggest surprise of them all took place on Long Island, with Hofstra upending Seton Hall in a nail-biter 49-48 that wasn't for the faint of heart. The Pride beating a Big East team for the first time since 2006 when they knocked off St. John's. And that's where we begin the podcast. The Pride of Hofstra. They are off to a 4-0 start for the second time in 3 years, despite losing their best player in Tyler Thomas, the best player in the metropolitan area, the Haggerty Award winner, and their leading scorer in D-Stone Dubar. They've lost a huge chunk of their scoring, but Speedy Claxton has reloaded. He is one of the up-and-coming coaches, not only in the Tri-State, but in the entire country. He has reloaded for another run at a Colonial Athletic title. They have been there knocking at the door. Is this the year that Hofstra wins it and goes to the NCAA tournament? Well, he's got a heck of a backcourt. He's brought in players like Jaquan Sanders from Seton Hall, Cruz Davis from St. John's, Gene Aaron Gurin from Iona. They not only form one of the best backcourts in the Colonial Athletic, but one of the best backcourts in the Tri-State area. And joining me now is a key member of that backcourt, the aforementioned Jaquan Sanders. Jaquan, welcome, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Hey, it is my pleasure, Jaquan. And first of all, listen, you broke my heart as a Seton Hall grad, but I have to say I am very happy for you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Very happy that you found a home at Hofstra. And how happy are you playing right now and playing for this team and being off to this 4-0 start?
It's great. As you can see, me having a rough 2 years, my first 2 years at Seton Hall. Just to come here and be, have a great family, great coaching staff, great teammates. That I just enjoy being around, off the court and on the court. Truth to be told, me and Speedy always been close. He been recruiting me since high school, so I really trusted him coming out the portal. As soon as he hit me, I knew that it was a green light that I would be coming here. Just off the fact that me and him built a great bond. Me and him and Coach DePauli, I always spoke to them. And I knew what type of great coaches they were. They was gonna push me to be the best I could be, and also have great people around me like my great teammates, managers, and the other coaching staff that would push me to be the best I could be. So just coming here and coming off to a group, it's a great feeling. It's a great feeling. So,
I bet. Tell me a little bit more about this connection with Speedy and why you guys connect so well.
Like I said, just him always reaching out to me and my family since high school. It meant a lot to me. Every coach doesn't do that. It was times that he'd reach out to me and tell me what I was doing wrong, even in my high school games. He'd tell me, what to do that's better, that would help me be better overall. Me coming in, as a junior, he told me that, this is a great opportunity for me, to come in and show everything I could do on the court. And he also told me, it's not only about basketball, it's also off the court, my education part as well. He was just, telling me the ins and out of, just being an overall great person and also a great basketball player. So that really touched me, to know that somebody truly cares besides basketball. That meant a lot to me and my family. So, a great shout out to Coach Speedy. He's a great guy overall. Every day he's checking up on me. So that's a blessing. Just coming from where I'm coming from, I just had a rough start, and I'm grateful to have a guy like Coach Speedy, to push me to the max.
I will say this, that game against Seton Hall was not for the faint of heart. It was an offensive struggle from both teams. All right.
Yes.
It's not going to go up in some offensive showcase, but to
Yes.
pull out that victory the way you did, to beat a Big East team for the first time Hofstra did since 2006 when they beat St. John's, what did
Wow.
that win mean for your team? And how was that celebration in the locker room?
It was a great feeling. To be honest, we didn't know how 2006 was the last time we beat a Big East team until we got to the media. So that was very surprising for me, and also it was a great feeling to know that I was a part of something like that. It was a great feeling. Just my teammates also. Shout out to them. My teammates was they was more happier, that we beat Seton Hall than I was, So just having a great team like that to be around, it pushed me every day to be the best I could be. Just having them in my circle, it helps me a lot. I speak to them every day. Those is like my brothers. I speak to them every day. We go out, we chill, talk about what we could do better on the court. Like even yesterday, after we had beat UMass, we was all together today all day, just chilling, talking and stuff like that. So it's just a great feeling to be around a great group of guys that want the same goals that I want and want to accomplish the same thing that I want to accomplish. It's an unbelievable feeling. So,
I know a lot of the players that you played with at Seton Hall aren't there. Only three remain, but Jaquan, did that mean a little something more for you to beat that team?
it definitely did. It definitely did. I was happy that I did it, but I also was just, more happy that, I didn't come short. Just going into the game, I wanted to prove something. That I could win without you. So it was, just a big impact on me that just to come in there, just having a rough time at Seton Hall, to being able to come and beat them, it was an unbelievable feeling. And just the guys knew how much it meant to me, to win that game. So we just went out there and played hard, and went in the right direction.
Not just that, but you struggled offensively for a good chunk of that game. I'd say the first
Yes.
28, 30 minutes, you had
Yes.
3 points, and then you had 10 of your 12 points down the stretch. And
Yes.
with the team up one, hit a huge dagger three-pointer that ended up being the difference in that game with under 2 minutes to play. How were you
Yes.
able to turn things around, first of all?
Just me staying confident. Since the summertime, Coach Speedy and Coach DePauly praised to me that I will have the green light. When things is not going my way, they still expect me to shoot and just stay, playing solid, playing physical, just being who I am. And the first half, it didn't go my way. My teammates had came to me and told me, like, we need you. We need you to be the best you could be. We need you in this moment right now. So great, a huge shout out to my teammates. I'm just giving me confidence, to stay down, be locked in, don't give up on myself. Because it was, truth be told, it was I was truly down on myself after the first half. I felt like I was letting my teammates down, but they told me, like, yo, we got you, we need you. So that definitely helped me in the long run. So
How good did it feel to hit that three and take me through that entire play from the rebound and then you getting open on that wing and hitting that three?
the funny part about it, if you see a couple plays before, I had told Cruz and Gene, it's gonna come down to a big shot and a big stop. And I told him after we get this stop, we're gonna have to come down and score. So we played great defense. I came down with the rebound. I looked up, Gene was in front of me, and I had told Gene, "I'm behind you, I'm behind you." He said, "I got you, keep running, I got you." And I knew he was gonna give it to me. Gene is a great point guard, is a great player to play with. So just me seeing the ball was coming my way, I was confident, I stayed ready, and I was able to knock down a shot. And you know, just truly a blessing to hit that big shot at the right time, you know, especially that I was going through a slump in the first half. So it was an unbelievable feeling. It was a great feeling, you know. Shout out to my teammates. It was great.
You have always had great range. You know, I've seen it for 3 years, and you
Yes.
came in as a very good shooter. What is your range?
I could shoot from anywhere. That's my confidence. I feel like I could shoot from anywhere. And my teammates believe in me. So I feel like if my teammates believe in me, I could come out there and shoot anytime I want. Anytime I feel like I'm open, I'm gonna make it. So just, you know, just having great confidence. And also just putting the work in. I feel like every day I'm in the gym, I'm putting up game reps. So it's more easier for me when I'm in the game. I feel like, you know, it's just a regular shot to me.
You know, to have that stroke, to have that confidence, it's a special talent. So keep shooting. All right. I want to ask you a personal question here because you said it a few times. You said, you know, you had it rough the first couple of years. Why didn't it
Yes.
work out at Seton Hall?
Just I believe my first year, it was just, you know, I was under older guys, Kadari Richmond, you know, Femi, Casey Nadefo, Alameda Dawes. You know, I was around guys that was already in the college, playing a lot of minutes there. So, you know, I had to wait my time. My second year, truth to be told, I really don't know what happened my second year. You know, it was supposed to be a big stride, but I got hurt during the season, like mid-October, November. I got hurt, so that was a big downfall. And then, you know, things just didn't go my way. The players that played when I was hurt, they, you know, continued playing. But he gave me a shot during the NIT. I made the best of it, you know. So now I'm just truly blessed to be in a new opportunity, a new place where I could call home, have great teammates, great coaching staff, and it's a blessing.
You know, you look at the backcourt and it's three players who I followed for the last couple of years, and you know, especially Gene, saw him a lot at Iona.
Yes.
Three transfers who have come in here. Gene from Iona and Cruz from St. John's, previously from Iona, and you from Seton Hall.
Yes.
But
Yes.
what talk about that connection. What has the connection been like, and how have you three been able to gel so quickly?
Well, truth to be told, I knew Gene before college. You know, me and Gene played against each other in high school all the time. And, you know, I always was around Gene. I always saw Gene. I always loved his game. He played hard, physical, you know, downhill player. I played against Cruz a few times, AU seasons and AU and Texas. So me and we always, like, you know, kept in touch. I always kept in touch with them individually. But when we found out we was coming, you know, to school together since the summertime, you know, we stayed locked in together, work out together, we go out, chill, you know, eat, watch film together, things like that. So I felt that made us have a great bond on and off the court. And I feel like we feed off each other. We're not selfish players. Like, if I know if it's not my day, you know, I told, yo, Gene, I need you. Cruz, I need you. So, you know, just always staying down. And those is great guys to be around. Like, if you know, you know. Truth to be told, like, I love those dudes. Even yesterday, you know, they was telling me, yo, I need you, I need you. Like, those is guys that I love to be around. Like I said, we just feed off each other energy. So it's a great feeling having teammates like that that's going to push you to the max and push you to be the best you could be. I love those guys.
I'll tell you what, Hofstra fans love you guys. You follow up that Seton Hall win, an emotional win. You have to
Yes,
go
sir.
to UMass, and coach gets you up for that game. It could have been a letdown following
Yes,
that trip
sir.
to Seton Hall, but yet you guys get that game. It goes into overtime. How about the way you guys responded and pulled out another win on the road against an Atlantic 10 team and winning it in overtime.
We go through this in practice, just staying focused, just staying down. Sometimes you go away, things will not go your way all the time. With the refs, just missing shots, things happen. So the main goal was for us to just, stay confident, believe in each other, and just be physical on defense. Our coaches always believe defense win games, and I believe we're a defensive team. The defense helps us, us getting stops on defense help us with our offense. So, we were just, staying down, just playing defense and staying physical. Like, things wasn't going our way, So we just staying down, staying confident. That was the main thing. Just staying confident, playing defense, staying physical, just being the more physical team from the start to finish. And I believe we did that and came up with the big W.
There's a lot to be said for that. Sometimes that when you're not on your game, you have to make plays. You have to create luck, and physicality or hustle plays can do that for you.
Yes.
Gene, you mentioned, and Cruz, it was their day, certainly against UMass.
Yes.
Gene ended up with 20 points,
Yes.
a career high for a guard. A career high 11 rebounds, and then Cruz goes career high 21 points. He had 6 rebounds.
Yes.
Those are pretty impressive numbers. What did you think of your backcourt mates there?
They're great. Especially the player with a group of guys like them. They could score, they could pass. As you can see, they rebound.
Yeah.
So it's great being around guys like that that can score but also can make plays for others. So that was our main focus coming into the summer as well, just being able to feed off each other. It's gonna be days when it's not my day, I'm missing shots. It's gonna be days when it's not Gene days, just staying locked in, being there for them during the moment, because it's going to be times you're going through rough times, and you're going to need your brother to pick you up. So us just, staying connected, building off each other. It's an unbelievable feeling, and I'm happy that they did great yesterday. I was in a slump yesterday, so I'm glad that, they picked up where I left off. So
What are you more proud of? Hofstra's been a high scoring team so far, but you talk about your defense. What are you more proud of, this team's offense or defense?
the defense. The reason why I say defense because I feel like we have great offensive guys that we all can score. So it's gonna be days, when a person I usually score doesn't score. Like yesterday wasn't my day. I had 9 points. Gene came down, had 19 or 20. Cruz had 20. So it's great, but we realize that, defense helps us build our offense. So just staying down, locking up our defender, whoever we guarding, being physical, playing hard to the start to finish, that creates our offense. So I feel like us playing defense will build our offense, and our offense will always be there. Defense win games, and we need that every day.
Yeah, you're going to need more defense against Florida State on Tuesday. What
Yes.
about what are you looking forward to about this matchup against Florida State?
It's not, it's, I wouldn't say it's no different. Everybody have their good days, their bad days, so we just treating them, like a regular opponent. Just coming in, playing physical, just trying to be the tougher team, making shots, making the right reads, things like that, just building great habits. And I also we had a conversation. I feel like these next couple games will help us a lot. At the end of March, just building and learning from our mistakes and things like that. So just coming into Tuesday's game versus Florida State, just coming ready to work, just being more physical, making the right reads, so hopefully we come out with the dub. I feel like we are. We're ready for it. We're ready for it. I feel like nobody on our team is scared of nobody. We just push each other every day to be the best we could be, and it starts in practice. Us playing against each other every day, pushing each other every day, help us during a real game. So just staying ready, just staying mentally prepared and things like that. I feel like that would help.
Yeah, it's a challenging week ahead. I know you're taking it one game at a time. You go to Florida State, then you go to nationally ranked Houston
Yes.
Friday. So big week for the Pride, going to Florida State, then Houston, then next week it's off to the Bahamas. So like I
Yes.
said, by the end of this
Yes.
month, by November 30th, December 1st, you're gonna know a lot about
Yes.
your team, Jaquan.
Yes, most definitely.
All right, Jaquan.
And
Thanks for
thank you so
listening.
much. I truly appreciate it.
It has been a pleasure. The pleasure has been all mine. I'm happy that you
Thank you so much.
found the right fit for you at Hofstra, and I appreciate you coming on this on your busy schedule. And best of luck the rest of the way. Hope to talk to you very soon. Thanks, Jaquan.
Thank you so much. Have a great night. I
You
appreciate
too.
you.
All right, that was Jaquan Sanders, and you heard it. He is happy. He has found a home at Hofstra. He feels like he belongs. He said he had it rough, and yeah, listen, sometimes it's not the right fit, and we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but every Seton Hall fan will tell you that Jaquan Sanders didn't fit Shaheen's style. Shaheen wanted him to play defense, made it clear throughout all of his offensive success, and it was limited, but he had offensive success at times. Shaheen would say in his press conference, I need Jaquan to play defense. I need him to play defense. It's not that he doesn't play defense. It's just that it didn't fit Shaheen's style. So it's no surprise. And sometimes, you give it a go and you go into the portal and you find or look for another opportunity. Sometimes that opportunity doesn't fit. Sometimes the pastures aren't as green on the other side. They're not greener on the other side, but clearly Jaquan Sanders has found greener pastures. He has found the right fit for the right coach, and he is thriving for Speedy Claxton. Hofstra is glad to have him. And this team is very much one of those teams to beat in the Colonial Athletic again, along with Charleston, along with the Delawares of the world. I mean, it's a brutal conference. UNC Wilmington, there are just some teams that Hofstra belongs with, and they're right up there at the top with all of them. Good for Jaquan, good for Hofstra, and we're going to have our eye on them all season long for sure, right here on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, let's go around the Tri-State because there's a lot to talk about. And we start with the center of attention on Sunday, Madison Square Garden, the mecca of college basketball. And what a matchup this was. Rick Pitino versus Richard Pitino, father versus son for the fourth time in their coaching lives. It's part of the draw of this game, the lure of this game. And if you were in that building in the final minutes, the final seconds ticking off, and the St. John's fans are chanting, "Who's your daddy?" That was good. That was fun. That was electric. And even Richard was asked after the game in defeat what he thought of that chant. And he said, to his credit, he said, "Those are New York fans being obnoxious. That's us New York fans." He said, "Us. That's us New York fans being obnoxious. And I'm a part of it. And I love it." I'm paraphrasing there, but you know what? It comes with the territory. Dad, on the other hand, was trying to hush the crowd. Trying to hush the crowd when they were doing it. And in his post game, he clearly did not want that to happen. He said, "I love our fans, but basically, I wish they hadn't done that." So, putting all that aside, all right, it was certainly part of the lure and part of the storyline, as I said. And to his credit afterward, Rick did say, "This is a game that I'm going to remember forever. Richard and I. It was special for us, and we're going to remember this moment forever."
I thought it was unbelievable for me and my son, and we'll remember this forever. certainly. For the New Mexico kids to play in Madison Square Garden, my pregame speech was, guys, this is your first game in Madison Square Garden. I grew up on 26th Street between 2nd and 3rd Avenue. And I said, I always dreamed about playing a high school game in the Garden, playing in the NIT back in UMass. You get to call this your home court. You don't understand how special it is. It's the world's most famous arena for a reason. And we're real appreciative of Joel and Sal and treating us like, we're the Knicks or the Rangers. This is our home court. So for New Mexico, for my son, for me, every time I walk in this building, it's special.
All right. So aside of all that, this was an impressive win by St. John's on many fronts. First of all, they were shorthanded. Patino only played three players off the bench: Wilcher, Prey, who gave them really good minutes, and Dunlap. I will say this, Ruben Prey, you can see the talent, the size in this international. And he's going to develop into a nice player. So he played off the bench, but really it was the starters logging all the minutes. All five starters in double figures in this game. All of them played at least 33 minutes. We saw, let's begin with Kadari Richmond, because Kadari showed us what Kadari can do. Now, it wasn't all good, okay? But offensively, we saw him do a little bit of everything. We saw him assert himself. We saw him be aggressive. We saw the return of the old Kadari Richmond. We saw the return of a player who was first team All Big East, who was preseason All Big East, who some people think has All American potential. And he rebounded. He had 8 rebounds. He had 5 assists and he had 14 points. He got to the hole. He missed his only 3-point attempt, but he scored the way Kadari Richmond does, getting in the lane, spinning, scoring, scoring on the break. And he was very good offensively, but 7 turnovers. 7 turnovers for one player. You cannot have that happen. As a team, St. John's had a season high 16 turnovers. And this is after they had 15 against Wagner. So file that away. That's something that needs to be cleaned up, especially going to the Bahamas, especially going up against Baylor. Clean up the turnovers or they will bite you in the ass. 7 turnovers should never happen for a player as talented and as good as Kadari Richmond. Why? He was overly aggressive, he was careless. Forced turnovers, right? He was forcing things and trying to do too much. Careless with the ball, and a lot of those were unnecessary. But Kadari had his best game since the opening game of the season against Wagner. This is the Kadari we came to expect, and this will hopefully be the Kadari that we see moving forward. Minus the turnovers. So Kadari, very good. Davon Smith, he wows me. I was worried about him in the preseason. He was still had some nagging injuries. Those injuries are behind him. This kid has springs in his legs. You can see why he's such a good rebounding guard for his size. He rebounds extremely well for his size. It's not like he's 6'5", 6'6", all right? He's 6'1"-ish. But he gets up. And there was one offensive rebound where he actually skied. I mean, it looked like he was on a pogo stick. Snatched the rebound, got up, made the hoop, and drew the foul. Missed the free throw. That's another thing. Too many missed free throws from St. John's as well. But when you win by 14, you can look past the turnovers and miss free throws. But Smith just, he's electric. He is so quick with the ball. He is so athletic. He is fun to watch. Really fun. And it's I'm seeing him really up close and personal for the first time. He blows by guys and makes really good decisions out there. He is tough to stop. So with his quickness and Richmond's size, I mean, you really have two dynamic playmakers there. And Sim Wilcher was kind of the guy, odd man out. All right. I'm not gonna talk too much about him, but this wasn't his game. All right. And he's had plenty of games before where he's played well. But because the starters were playing so well, and this was a game where Pitino rode the starters, Wilcher was the odd man out. Aaron Scott loved being at the Garden for the first time. I asked him after the game, you know, what it was like playing in the Garden. I asked Lewis and Scott, you know, what it was like playing St. John's first game in the Garden this year with the atmosphere. There were about 13,000 fans. It felt like a mid-January Big East game. It was loud, it was energetic. And Scott was like, I mean, he admitted it not only was the first time he ever played in the Garden, it was the first time he'd ever been to the Garden. And he loved every minute of it. He said it was hard to hear during timeouts. It was hard to hear them talk. And he was gushing about this experience. And oh, by the way, he hit the biggest shot of this game when New Mexico, to their credit, all right, they were down double digits for most of this game, for big chunks of this game, and they wouldn't go away. They came back with the three ball in the second half. They took advantage of sloppy turnovers by St. John's. And at one point, with 8 minutes to go, they cut it to four. This was a 4-point game with 8 minutes to go. And the 500 or so fans, New Mexico fans that made the trip were loud. It was 63-59. St. John's needed to stop the bleeding. And who was it? Aaron Scott. You've heard me say it on this podcast before. I really like this kid. I think he can be an NBA player. I think that he has size and shooting ability and range and athleticism to play at the next level. He can certainly play at this level. And on a team where there's so much talent, all right, he can score. Any one of these guys can score 20 on any given night. Scott, Richmond, Smith, Lewis, Wilcher, any of them. Dunlap, they've all proven it. Even Ejiofor, who did it in the scrimmage against Rutgers. Any of them can score 20 on any given night. There is a lot of scoring on his team. So guys aren't going to wow you with 18-point averages. It's not going to happen on this team. The leading scorer for St. John this year, St. John's may have, you know, 15, 16 points. You're not going to see an 18, 20-point scorer on this team. There's just too many good players who can score. And Scott was one of those players who hit that big shot. It turned a 63-59 advantage into a 66-59 advantage, and New Mexico never got closer than four the rest of the way. They never cut it to four once again. It was never a threat. That was a big time bucket by Scott. As a matter of fact, the rest of the way, the closest they got was five, because at some point with 3 minutes to go, St. John's upped it to 11. Big plays by Davon Smith, who hit a three, second chance points, offensive rebounds. Scott, Richmond, Smith, the veterans made plays. And of course, RJ Lewis Jr. made plays all game long. He had his best game ever in a St. John's uniform, in my opinion. He may have scored more points, but he never had seven assists or 11 rebounds in a game. All right. This is his fourth double-double in a St. John's uniform. He finished with, and second this year, he finished with 21 points, 11 rebounds, and a career-high seven assists. You have heard me say in this podcast, he can be selfish. He needs to get more involved and make other players around him better. He needs to elevate his game with passing, and he did that. In his 3 years of college, three previous years of college basketball, one at UMass, two at St. John's, and four games this year, he has never had seven assists in a game. He was the complete package. He was the MVP of this game. All the starters were good, as I said, but he was the brightest. This was his best all-around game, and he was a handful. And not only that, but at the other end, he was the guy who most of the time was guarding New Mexico's best player, Donovan Dent, who came into this game averaging 19 points. It wasn't just Lewis. It was Kadari at times. It was Davon Smith at times. And the centers, I mean, my goodness, Ejiofor was constantly watching Dent and closing down the lanes. And if he beat his man, he was right there to shut him down and force the ball out of his hands. Dent came in averaging 19. He was held to 12 points on 5 of 12 shooting. And most of that came late in the game when St. John's had already sealed the deal. So you throw that in there, and Lewis was the complete package, offensively, defensively, setting his teammates up, rebounding, scoring. He did it all in 36 minutes. And welcome to the 2024 season, Zubi Ejiofor, a player who has been MIA for long stretches, a player who wasn't aggressive on offense, wasn't rebounding the ball, was publicly criticized by his coach, was benched for Vince Wichukwu, came back, responded in a big way with his best performance of the season. Double double, 13 points, 10 rebounds. The big man was a force at both ends of the floor. He was aggressive, he went up strong, and he more than held his own against a player that we know from the tri-state, Nelly Jr. Joseph, is a player who came from where? Iona. Was recruited by who? Rick Pitino. He has since gone on to success at New Mexico after leaving Iona after 3 years. This is his fifth year. He is a big man, Nelly Jr. Joseph, who is doing really good things. He came into this game averaging 17 points, but for all intents and purposes, this matchup of big men was a draw. Nelly had 16 points. He outscored Zubi, but he really didn't rebound the way Ejiofor did. Ejiofor was more of a force at both ends. And without Zubi's play, this game might have gone a different way. Okay, without that interior presence, this game might have gone a different way. But St. John's responded. New Mexico is a very good team. They are going to compete in their conference. They are, they won 26, 27 games last year, right? They're an NCAA team. They already knocked off number 22, UCLA. And they're going to be very good. All right. So this was St. John's first real test of the year. Great scheduling by Pitino before they go to the Bahamas and they face Baylor. That game, of course, I think Baylor's number 12. That game is something that St. John's fans have really been saying is our first litmus test. Well, this one was their first litmus test because they could have lost this game. It almost got away from them, but Aaron Scott and Davon Smith and Kadari Richmond made sure it did not, and they won handily, 85-71. They were in control most of this game. They led for 75-80% of the game. They deserved to win. Very nice win. And now we're going to learn more about this team over the next week. So great to see the starters exceed the way they did, all five in double figures. Good for Zubi. Great for Kadari. They're going to need all of them moving forward. So that's St. John's. Let's keep it in the Big East. Let's talk Seton Hall. If there ever was a time when a team had to stop the bleeding and face a must win, it was Seton Hall. This game brought us back to literally the 1940s. And if you want to get more specific, brought us back to 1947. Seton Hall won this game 54 to 28. Let me repeat. That's not a halftime score. Okay? Seton Hall won this game in the shot clock era 54-28. I'm sure you already heard about it. It is the best defensive effort Seton Hall has had since 1947. Now, I incorrectly said that it was the fewest points they had allowed since they allowed 28 points to Panzer College in 1947. Later that year, they allowed only 20 points, 20 to Ryder College. So, in a span of a month in 1947, they held Panzer College to 28. They held Ryder to 20. And here we are, some 77 years later, in the shot clock era, and Seton Hall holds a team in Wagner to 28 points. It's the fewest points that Wagner has ever scored in a college basketball game. They scored 14 in the first half, 14 in the second half. Was it that Seton Hall's defense was that good? Wagner's offense is that bad, or a combination of both? I'm going to say a combination of both. Wagner is offensively challenged. They struggle to shoot the ball, they struggle to hit from three. They're not as bad as they were. But they are not a great offensive team, and neither is Seton Hall. Seton Hall is going to hang its hat on defense. They have not allowed more than 57 points in a game all year. I believe they're giving up an average of 46.8 points per game over four games. All right? Less than 47 points per game. Now, you can say all you want about, oh, look who they're playing. But 48 points is 48 points. All right? These mid-majors are getting better and better every year with the talent they have. Hofstra is a high-scoring team. That's a team that outside of Seton Hall is averaging over 80 points a game, and Seton Hall held them to, I believe, 48. So they're going to have to hang their hat on defense. They're going to have to win ugly. I don't know if this is going to be a recipe to win in the Big East. All right? It's going to be a recipe that they're going to have to use until they can get better offensively, until their players can get more confidence, and until they can find out who is the point guard of this team. So let me talk about that, and then I'll get to the offense. Who is the point guard of this team? Because right now, this team is without a point guard. Garway Dhule was supposed to be Seton Hall's point guard. He struggled in his first couple of games, and Shaheen Holloway admitted after this game that he's suffering from a shoulder injury and some other things. He didn't exactly say what they were, but clearly the reason why Garway Dhule was not in a Seton Hall uniform, he was in warmups on the bench, is because of his shoulder injury. And he's not coming back this week. Holloway said, I'm going to have to figure out how to get Chauncey Jenkins and Dylan Adeyewusu to play point guard. That brings us to the other point guard, Zion Harmon, whose days in a Seton Hall uniform might be numbered. There's a lot of gray about Zion Harmon. All right. He came in from Bethune-Cookman, was a former four-star player who has had some troubles, who has had some mental health issues. And I don't know if that's what's causing the problems right now. Maybe he's not seeing eye to eye with Shaheen Holloway. Maybe it has something to do with playing time. Whatever it is, it could be a combination of all of those. All right, Zion Harmon reportedly left the bench during the Hofstra game without permission. He did not suit up at all. He was not on the bench. And all that Shaheen Holloway said afterward was there's a lot going on with him. He's got some things going on. So read into it what you may. Until we see him in a uniform, he and Shaheen are going to have to work things out. And we may have seen the last of him, but for Seton Hall's sake, they need him. The question is, can he and Holloway repair whatever's going on, and can they get on the same page? So until Garway Dewell comes back and gets healthy and can figure out how to run Shaheen Holloway's point guard and offense, it's going to be Chauncey Jenkins and Dylan Adeyewusu. That is not a recipe for success in the Big East. They need someone to figure this out in a hurry. The good news is they have a few days to get ready for their tournament in Charleston and get ready for a very good VCU team who is the preseason favorites in the Atlantic 10. Shaheen has a lot of things to figure out in a short period of time. The good news is the defense is there. He's got to get the offense going. And afterward, Shah talked about the struggles with the offense and why the defense has been so good early on. Here's what he had to say.
You know, when you come in with a new group, the first thing you got to establish something. And this coach is our defense. So that's what I established this summer with them. And then you got a bunch of guys out, a bunch of guys that's now trying to come back. And now you're trying to figure a way, okay, now I got this guy back. I got this guy back. How can we score now? How can we do this now? Now you get two of your point guards out. Now I got to figure it out again. And that's just connecting the dots, man. And as part of it, I ain't worried about him. I'm built for it.
If somehow Seton Hall can get Chauncey Jenkins, Yasin Tumey, and someone like Isaiah Coleman and Dylan Adeyewusu in double figures, then the offense can come around. Those are the four most likely candidates to do it. So impressive, off the charts defensive performance against Wagner. Defense is going to have to carry them into and through the Charleston Classic. We'll see what happens there. All right, now let's talk Rutgers. New Jersey's undefeated team. The Scarlet Knights look good. And the story of their game against Monmouth, and it's multiple stories, the headline to come out of it was the debut of Ace Bailey. Bailey was awesome. They drew up a play to get Bailey going on their first possession. And to Monmouth's credit, they snuffed out. It was going to be an alley-oop, kind of a backdoor baseline alley-oop. Monmouth snuffed it out. And of course, the veterans who were there and the Zach Martinis saw this and they ran the option off of this and they got Bailey an ISO and he hit a shot that probably only Ace Bailey hits on his team with an athletic turnaround on the baseline and got his feet wet with his first points for Rutgers. And how did he do in the end? Well, I'd say he did pretty well because he scored 17 points in his debut. He had an emphatic, athletic alley-oop dunk off of an inbounds play. He played 30 minutes, unfortunately had some cramping afterward, and Steve Peichel admitted to it afterward that he was cramping up and that he needs to get into shape, otherwise he would have came out in the press conference. So Peichel knows it, Bailey knows it, he needs to get in game shape, but for a freshman to come in and score 17 points and grab six rebounds in his collegiate debut, that's pretty impressive. The offense just was different. The offense felt more complete. Guys were getting open shots. You know, Dylan Harper draws a crowd, okay? But now you have Ace Bailey over there. And where's the crowd going to go? The crowd can't be in two places at once. So, with proper ball movement and guys sensing double teams and hitting open men, you're going to see a lot more open looks with Bailey and Harper on the floor together. Because Dylan Harper has just proven to be in my mind, as good as advertised. And in some cases, I think he's better than advertised because not even the most optimistic Rutgers fan could have predicted that Harper would score 20 points in his first three collegiate games. No Rutgers player had done that since the great Phil Sellers. That's the company that Dylan Harper is keeping. Three straight 20-point games as a freshman to begin your Rutgers career. Phil Sellers is the only other Rutgers player to do that, 1972. And in case you're wondering, Sellers didn't score 20 points in his fourth game. So if Harper does it, he will be the first Rutgers player to do it in four straight games, scoring 20 points. That's what Harper is doing. So that's pretty damn good company. Rutgers as a team scored 98 points, the most in a Steve Peichel era. And the Rutgers skeptics are going to say the defense was poor. The defense is not doing well enough to defend the three. And I'm going to get to that. But when you're scoring 98 points, unless you're Loyola Marymount from 1987, okay, that's where I'm going with this. It's never going to be a vintage Steve Peichel defense. It's just not. There's not enough time with the freshmen to do that, but they have to be good. They have to be better than average, and they can get there. The good news is defense, you can work at that. You can get better at it. So the offense right now is just very good. When you have these weapons, guys are going to get open. And on this night, Zach Martini was the beneficiary, scoring 18 points, had eight field goals, was hitting one three after another, was very good in this game. Very good. And was 4 of 7 from three. So you had him with 18, you had Harper with 20, you had Bailey with 17. The other player I want to talk about is Jordan Durkack because he's a player who does a little bit of everything. We've talked about him before, and Rutgers fans are smart enough to know that this kid does everything. He is their best defensive player. He can impact a game without doing a lot of scoring. Why? Because he's going to get assists, he's going to defend, he's going to get rebounds. He's going to dive on the floor for loose plays, loose balls. He's going to get charges. Every game, Jordan Durkack does a little bit of everything. He had 9 assists in the game. He led Rutgers in assists. And afterward, Steve Peichel was raving about his team's 21 assists. That was one of the things that Peichel made clear in his post-game press conference that he was happy about.
We had 21 assists, I think it was, 21 assists. I mean, when you pass the ball like that, we made our free throws, we made threes. You know, this team's capable of doing. He got us off to a really good start. I mean, Jordan does a little bit of everything, got everybody involved. Dylan chips in with 6 assists and 1 turnover. You know, Jay Mike does what he does. You know, I love PJ's minutes too. Came off the bench, made some big plays for us. You know, Acuff gave us some good minutes as he keeps, you know, getting healthier. So that thought, and Lathan, you know, he comes in and, you know, keeps playing. I think he's our leading rebounder today. Another really good, you know, good game for him. And, you know, so I like the team win. Everyone contributed. Team win.
Peichel can't say enough good things about the little things. And he knows the defense has to get better. All right. He wasn't happy with the fact that a guy by the name of Abdi Bashir ate up Rutgers. Abdi Bashir has been given the keys to Monmouth. He is the player that King Rice has entrusted to replace his son, Xander Rice. Last year, it was all about Xander Rice. Xander Rice had the best year of his career, one of the best seasons in the tri-state. First team all CAA. A brilliant player. Well, this year, as a sophomore, Abdi Bashir is a name that Monmouth fans and fans in the tri-state need to know because he hit 38 points against Rutgers. 10 three-pointers. He set a mammoth record with 10 three-pointers. And he was doing things that was keeping, it was keeping Monmouth in this game. Now, Rutgers never lost control of this game. But every time he looked up, Bashir for three, Bashir for three, Bashir for three. And it was getting out of hand. And Pyke will be the first to tell you that, you know, they need to do a better job. But what he did at Jersey Mike's Arena, he was 3 points, oh, by the way, off the record by a visiting player. John Gurdy of Davidson scored 41 points at the rack back in 1977. That is the most by a visiting player against the Rutgers team. So that's how good Bashir was. This wasn't his first time scoring many points, having over 20 points. He's done it three times this year. He had 20 against Michigan State. He had 25 against Northern Illinois, and now 38. He's averaging 23 points, so the fact that he scored 38 should not surprise us. But Rutgers needs to do a better job defensively, defending the three-point line. That is clear. I love King Rice's comments afterward because he's going to tell you how it is. He's going to tell you that he loves seeing Ace Bailey out there. He's going to tell you that Ace Bailey is great for college basketball, great for college basketball in New Jersey, great for college basketball in general. He's happy for the man. Not happy that he did it against Monmouth, but happy that Ace Bailey played. He's also going to say what he feels about Abdi Bashir, because when a player at a mid-major scores 38 points, it's going to draw the attention of major schools.
What it really does is it's going to get them recruited more, okay? But what it's really, really going to do, it's going to ensure that his family gets taken care of because he can play basketball. Okay, and he always tells me, no, coach, I'm not leaving you. I'm going to be with you. But when you get 38 at Rutgers in your fourth game as a sophomore, and we're in this new college basketball world, we got to understand what this is going to mean. And no one could be happier for a person than I am for him with what he's did tonight, just to put the world on notice.
He's right. He's not going to sugarcoat it. When you do that, other teams are going to take notice. And I'm going to go on the record right now. Don't be surprised if Bashir transfers at the end of the season, goes into the portal, and Steve Pikiell goes after him. And Steve Pikiell lands him. Don't be surprised if any of that happens. I'm not saying I have any inside information. Who knows what Rutgers roster is going to look at and look like, and if they need a player like Bashir. But he is going to get looks and offers if he keeps this up. And there's nothing that tells me he won't keep it up. So a player like Bashir doing what he's doing for Monmouth not only draws attention to them, but also tells you that Monmouth is going to be very good this year in the CAA, and they are going to contend. And they got one of their best players back in Jarrett Valencia. He was coming off an injury, only played 10, 11 minutes in this game. But when he gets healthy as well, Valencia and Bashir are going to be a really nice 1-2 punch for Monmouth. They really are. So Monmouth, even in defeat, they're going to be fine. As long as they're healthy, they're going to make some noise. All right. That'll do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. We saw a great week from teams individually, as well as team performances. And I like what we're seeing so far. A lot to talk about in the Tri-State. Before we go, I want to thank our sponsor, Mike Supa of Remax Revolution. He is a trusted name in real estate. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth or Ocean Counties, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577, and tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Until next time, thanks for listening, thanks for downloading, and thanks for sharing the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I could not do it without you. We're trying to grow this and spread the word. And if you like what you hear, please tell your friends and family about us, the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Subscribe to us. Give us a follow. Until next time, enjoy the games, everyone. I'm Brian DeNovellis. So long.